privacy is a problematic area, but if we think enough and we kind of do our own risk assessment and act on it, we can at least reduce the risk. We can at least be aware of it and do something about it.
This is KBCast. As a primary target for ransomware campaigns,
is security and testing and performance and scalability.
Risk and compliance.
We can actually automate that.
Take that data and use it.
Joining me today is Yuri Milo-Slavsky, CEO from SharePass. And today we're discussing the risks of digital footprints in information sharing. So Yuri, thanks for joining and welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. So Yuri, you know, you and I have spoken a lot over the time I've known you, and I'm curious to probably start with a little bit more around digital footprint, people who aren't familiar. I know we've touched on it in past in our chats, but tell me, let's start right there. What is it?
So it's quite a wide term, but it generally includes a trail of information or and data that you leave behind when you use the internet. Now, whether if it's browsing, sharing information, or really searching or anything really, any information you put online. So digital footprint is what's left and the trails you leave behind, which can be identifiable information, but it stays after you're online.
Yeah, of course. So would you say, do you think though, I mean, I'm going to ask this, do you think people like don't really care about that though? Like just with everything that's happening at the moment, I know we're getting into that, but like they get it, but do you think people care?
People don't care because they're not necessarily aware of it. So, you know, usually if there are certain risks and you're not aware that there is a risk, then obviously you kind of care less. So people tend to prioritize kind of accessibility rather than their own private security, because they're not always aware of the risks.
Yeah, but I also think that perhaps, you know, even I'm speaking to people at different generations. Now, some people say they just don't care, even if they are aware of the risks. Even if I'm speaking to someone on the weekend about, you know, these are some of the risks, people just go, oh, I don't really care. Like, all these other breaches have happened and all these other things are happening. I think people, I don't know, do you think that perhaps they're just like, well, there's so much going on in the world, like it's just another thing I've got to think about and worry about, and until it happens to them, as we know, do you think people are just not going to really think about it or care?
I think the awareness is slowly going up and people are a little bit more aware of the risks. So yes, there will always be people that kind of care less about those things. There are also people who don't care and they still, for example, use very, very simple passwords or like no MFA. And you will always find those type of users. But the majority of people are becoming more and more aware. And as kind of technology progresses and the new generation becomes more technological, I would say, people understand, in my opinion, more and more that their online presence is actually important and critical. And it can really risk like pretty much everything, and starting from financial and on the way up to, you know, private and so forth. So, you know, everything online today. So I think awareness is going up. It's still not quite there, but I believe people care more about it.
Okay, so you said before online presence, you know, when people are aware, they care more about it. What do you think, when you're speaking to people, what do they care most about, would you say, if you had to guess?
Well, people most of all care about just accessing data and that being convenient and user-friendly. So people love when it's easy. So, and in the pursuit of easy, sometimes they give up on their personal information. They give up on a very important aspect of privacy.
And I mean, that sort of leads me to my next sort of point is people are willing to trade. I mean, we've heard this term, security or privacy for convenience, which I understand, right? So work out that conundrum for me. Like, I get it. Like, if I put my general person hat on, I understand it. But then, of course, from a security point of view, it doesn't work. But then sometimes the way in which cybersecurity practitioners think, just it's people can't operate like that. We can't have all of these things and all these barriers or else things would never get done, right? So where do we find the equilibrium?
What happens normally is there is quite a wide gap between the industry and the end user. And as you said, convenience is quite a major factor for the typical end user, because they just want to get things done and they want it done simply and easily. And this is why I believe there is a gap, because the industry tends to offer a lot of solutions for a lot of problems, but quite a lot of these solutions are quite a steep curve in terms of learning. And some of them tend to be more complex, and a lot of them tend to also complicate things to the point where the user says, well, you know what, I'll accept the risk because it's just easier and I cannot be bothered with all those tools all the time. So the trick is to find and to produce the right tools that are simple enough for a user to use. For example, like in the click of a button, right? So if I'm doing something and it only requires for me like another tap, then in a way it's acceptable, at least for me. If suddenly you need to change the whole process and you need to now onboard a new tool and you need to use it in a different way, and there's a lot of those pop-ups and annoying things, then the user will be like, yeah, well, I don't have time for this. So it's a really kind of, I would say, sensitive balance that we need to find as the providers, as the industry, to allow the users to still carry on their work while keeping it simple.
So can I ask, how do we get to this point where we're overcomplicating things for people, where it's becoming so... People are saying, this is so complicated and convoluted. As a result of that, I'm choosing to just go with the option, which probably isn't the best option, but it's just easier. Have people not paid attention to how users operate, or what?
We have two sides here. One is basically the, you know, the world of hackers and whoever does the online crime. They're getting more sophisticated. And because they're getting more sophisticated, then the industry and, you know, cybersecurity industry, it has to become more sophisticated. And part of that is becoming more technical. Now, it was always a challenge to take technical concepts and explain them to everyday end users because, well, they don't do it on a daily basis. They don't necessarily understand it. I can take an example. Have a look at MFA. Now, it's obviously recommended and urged to be deployed in all organizations, but there are still many companies, and I'm even talking about companies that haven't implemented that because of the complexity that users have of just using it. You're saying, oh, I have this SMS then, and it arrives, and suddenly it does it. And a lot of people getting really confused, even on the onboarding process. Now, you can see percentages up. We see more and more users. So it's a matter of deploying those solutions and kind of getting used to them, and it just takes time. So not everything becomes immediate, but once we create enough awareness and we're provided with simple enough tools, it will improve because more and more users will become more aware, more users will try, more users will learn the process. And, you know, as a result, the tools will become effective, but it's a learning curve and it takes time.
What do you mean by awareness though? Now, I know it sounds like a very basic question, but people say we need more awareness. I think people are aware though, and I think they choose not to do it. I'll give you an example. I was at an event. It was in an office. Sophisticated office, the guy had his password literally written on a post-it note. I was rattled. He's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't do it, but it's just easier. This is a real example. This was recent, like a couple of months ago. So people say smoking's bad for you, yet people still do it. There's awareness. They've tried to crack down on it, try to tax you more. People are still doing it. So how do we get past that point, though?
Yeah, well, it kind of reminds me of dealing with children, right? Sometimes they, until they get hurt, they will keep on doing the same thing no matter how many times you warn them. And unfortunately, it's just a simple reality of humanity. We all assume it will not happen to us. We all kind of like, yeah, I understand the risk. I understand all that, but it's not really relevant to me. Who am I? I'm just a regular person. And everybody assumes that. And the next thing happens that they get hacked and then they, you know, and then suddenly they realize what sort of a hassle it is because now they need to reset passwords, call the bank, call the insurance company, call this, call that. And the problem is that once your online identity gets breached, it just keeps on rolling. Like you don't know where it stops because everything runs online. So once your account got compromised, your bank details, for example, got compromised and credit cards, and from there, the road is very long. So unfortunately, some people have to get burned to learn the lesson. And I don't think there is a way around it, to be honest. But then again, that's our responsibility as kind of like as the industry, as the providers, as the vendors, is to educate as many people as possible so at least they understand the risks. And if people are willing to take that risk, then, you know, end of the day, it's a free country, it's a democracy. And if that's what they want to do and they choose to do it, then they just need to be aware there is a risk. But the problem is that sometimes it's not a risk for them to take. And I think that's where the problem begins, because if a user risks his own online identity, his own information, it's one thing. But if he does those practices in an organization, it's quite a different issue here, because they risk somebody else's assets. And then they can be liable with their job. They can be liable with, you know, they can be liable for that in general. So it really depends on the case.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there which is interesting. So you said before, like, you know, giving that broad awareness of people has to understand. But do you think perhaps vendor and friends educating on the tech rather than the users? Now, I'm looking at content in companies across the world and large, medium, small vendors all the time. You think people are too focused on that? Because really, at the end of the day, like, it does need to be focused on the users in terms of, like, what do they get out of it? Because really, no one wants to do more things than they have to do. People already got enough on their to-do list. If they can try to perhaps get back 30 seconds of not doing the extra, you know, authentication with MFA, they probably will. Do you think that perhaps there's just been a lack of understanding people at sort of a fundamental level and living in a perfect world where people are going to do all these checks and balances?
Again, I think it's a matter of progress across the timeline. If you can remember where we started with computers, quite a lot of systems didn't have passwords at all. It would be just open. And that at some point was considered to be fine. And sometimes those systems were quite sensitive systems. But as the risk increased, solutions emerged. And today is like an obvious thing when you access something online. It's pretty much already obvious that you have password. And nobody challenges that anymore. People do challenge passwords. They want other methods, I understand, for convenience. But nobody challenges the fact that you need to have it segregated and you need to have it locked. And the same will happen with majority of the technologies we see today. Antivirus thing is another example. No computer used to have it. It came much later. Initially, there was no antivirus because there were not a lot of viruses. So as I said, as the dark side of the online activity emerges, so do the methods to protect. And then the implementation of it, yes, it just takes time across the timeline. And that's the only thing I see. So in 50 years, whether if it's a fingerprint or face recognition or anything, or of voice recognition, it will still remain. It will be just simplified. And I guess that's what the industry is trying to do. We just want to simplify our solutions so the users do not consider it as a major burden.
And I think that's the way it probably does need to go, because again, like, in a perfect world, we'd love to do all of these things, but that's not the reality of how people are and what they care about. Like, people don't like friction. So then on that note, and I've used this example before, if you're looking at an e-commerce company, your job effectively is to make money. So making money is to get people to buy things. If there's so many things that creates friction, like there's so many MFA, the average person, and they're like, I don't know this, I don't know that, I couldn't be bothered, therefore I'm going to leave the platform because it's all too hard for me to procure something through there. So would you say companies out there know that and are willingly gambling with that fact of, well, I need Yuri to buy for my platform, because that's what we're here to do. At the end of the day, businesses are here to make money. Security is a very big part of that, of course. But I would say, from talkings I've had with certain companies out there, that they do gamble on that. So it's like, well, we don't increase friction because we're not going to then collect the money from a bunch of people because they're going to get frustrated because they don't know their password, they don't know how to reset it, they can be bothered, and then they'll leave. Do you think, from your perspective, companies are acutely aware of that? And then as a fact saying, well, we're just going to overlook that. And if something bad happens, then they'll say, oh, well, we didn't know, or we tried our best.
Well, 100%, 100%. You can see it and you can prove it by the fact that we have cybersecurity insurance. That's what cybersecurity insurance is for. So companies are well aware of the risk. They're well aware that there will be breaches, there will be problems with security, and they basically put policies around them to protect themselves, and cyber insurance being a part of it. So 100% yes.
But then how do we get people past that? Because at the end of the day, like, you need customers to trust you, to buy from you. And the thing that we'll probably perhaps all start seeing, and I don't know if you agree on this, would be, well, people are like, well, it costs a lot of money to implement all of these things. And as people say, it's not tangible. We can't see the thing that we've bought, all these millions of dollars and all these tools and all these people and all of this. But do you think that companies will consistently gamble that risk with their customers because they want to collect the revenue? They want to keep going past go and just hoping that they don't end up in jail on a proverbial, you know, monopoly board.
companies need to, first of all, always be, you know, following certain regulations and compliance. And you can see compliance is increasing. So there is obviously a move to force companies to think more about security. And this is why, for example, during the phase even of development, there is a security by design where security is being implemented from the ground up. So it's not like you design a software and you're like, oh yeah, but we don't have security. Let's put it now. It's something that you need to consider as a vendor from day one. And a software that is just by design not secure enough, then will be, you know, replaced with another software which is. And it's just, again, just a matter of time. So companies definitely addressing that. They're also aware that there is still a risk. They have to, because like you said, profitability is then probably number one priority for all businesses, even for the ones that claim that's not, because that's the whole idea of a business. So does the profitability comes as a priority on top of security? Probably. But again, if your security is not in place, your profitability would suffer. Now, whether if it's fines or whether if it's breach of your data, which, you know, resulting in millions of dollars if it's a large company. If you, even for small companies, the damages, you can't measure them because they're damages to reputation. So companies that gets breached, usually there is a big hit on their reputation, and reputation is everything for them. So it's a direct hit on their productivity. So if they think about revenue and revenue only, well, cybersecurity is something they definitely have to consider.
So Yuri, you also talk about current practices on information sharing. So perhaps give us some examples.
We've been in the industry for quite a while. I run an MSP. And what we see a lot is user sharing data of any tool. No, I'm not saying one or the other. People will share data everywhere, whether if it's social media, where it's programs like chatting tools, WhatsApp, Microsoft Teams, email, even SMS. And it's convenient because people love convenience. So I want to share something with you and I want to do it over SMS and I wouldn't do it over WhatsApp because those are programs I already have on my mobile and they're easy to use. Email is another example. Everything's being shared over the email. And as I always say, those platforms, they're fine to share information, but the problem is that that information will remain on those platforms after you shared. And as users, we're not aware of it. So I will send you something. It could be an address. It could be details of client. It could be even a password. And once I send it, I sort of achieved my mission because I'm like, yeah, I need to get that information to you. That's my line of thought. And after the information is with you and you achieved what you need to do, we both forgot about it. It's no longer relevant, but the digital footprint is there, which means that information is on my mobile and that information is on your mobile. So there are two points of weakness and it's just out there in clear text. So if your phone gets compromised or mine, in my case, I can vouch for my own security. But in your case, I sent you that data. I have no idea what you're doing with that phone. Maybe you're leaving it unlocked in the middle of a street. I have no way of knowing. And that's where the risk begins.
And again, do you think people are aware of these risks? But again, it's like, oh, I couldn't be bothered trying to figure it out. I just need to really text Yuri because I need to fly out of the country soon. So therefore it won't matter. Yeah, a lot of those sort of theories are going in people's minds. Like maybe they kind of are aware, but they're just sort of banking on the fact that, again, it doesn't happen to them or, you know, I'm just one person. Those are the thoughts that are going through people's minds?
Some people who are more, for example, aware of privacy. For example, I'm a very private person. I like my own privacy. And like majority of people, for example, don't read privacy notes and things like that. I do, not all of them maybe, but for the most of it. So some people are not aware, of course, and some people don't even care. But this is where we come in and that's our job is to explain and then to keep highlighting that it is a risk. And, you know, We all can implement all sorts of tools and companies can implement tools that cost thousands and tens of thousands of dollars just for the regular end user eventually go and share a database password over Teams. And then if that Teams gets compromised, that's it. From there, you can leverage your way into the system and do a lot of damage.
Yeah, and I understand that. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, when I put two hats on, my, you know, my journalistic hat on, you know, asking people like yourself in the industry these types of questions, then I put my like general person hat on. It's just always interesting to look at things from both sides. So you talk a lot about the price you pay for accessibility and convenience, as we've discussed, but I really want to follow this a little bit more, that, you know, at the end of the day, companies care about making profit. Now, if you are a CISO, I guess your agenda is different. But to your point, people go into businesses to make money. So where, how does this then make sense? I think companies, do you think that they care to a point up until they get pinged? And do you think that they, again, they're trading and they're gambling on these things? Because we've seen it time and time again. And companies will then put something up on their site to say, we care about your privacy and all of that. But it's like, hey, well, you didn't invest in X company or you didn't invest in better policies or practices to avoid this issue. So I feel like now people become a bit more skeptical towards companies and, you know, are they genuine in saying that? Because anyone can say that. But as you know, has to be followed up with action. So what are your thoughts then on this?
100%. A lot of companies say that and because they know they have to. But the good part of it is, as I said previously, we have more and more compliance being introduced, which again, it has its benefits and it has its drawbacks. But companies, it's no longer really a choice for them in many cases. It's a lot of it is being enforced today. And it's good in a way because that enforcement is a benefit to the end user. So how can I, as an end user, know for a fact what the security is implemented for a certain company? I can read their website and obviously they will make it look good, but behind the scenes, maybe it's not their priority. And it can happen. But as you can see, you know, compliance is advancing quite fast. ISO 27001, you have SOC, you have a lot of type of compliances, and some of them are being enforced. Like you have to have it in order to provide certain services. So if you provide payment gateways, then you need to have PCI DSS compliance, for example. And a lot of it is ticking the boxes, but by ticking the boxes, you resolve a lot of those issues. Not all of them. But I think awareness in businesses around cybersecurity is increased tenfold. Year on year, you can see like more and more companies take it more seriously because the amount of breaches is increasing constantly. And, you know, that drives improvement. So I'm quite optimistic about it, to be honest. I think security in general is improving. It's not degrading.
Okay, so PCI DSS, for example. Now, this is a really interesting one. Now, I get that, but there's a lot of people out there not really governing or auditing what these people are doing. I've even called up MasterCard for an interview about that. No response was, no, we don't want to do an interview. So again, do you think that, because you're going to think about how much time, and I mean, I worked in a governance role. So it's like, do you think that, again, it's like, well, how much money does all this cost? That may outweigh the potential money we may lose on, you know, the fraudulent side of things. I think businesses really are looking at it like that.
Oh, it is. So for example, if a bank or a credit card company, like think of it as a certain risk, right? They're saying, okay, we have that risk. All right. As a result of that risk, if that risk becomes real, we lose 5 million. Okay. Let's estimate it at 5 million. All right. Fixing that risk, dealing with the problem will cost us 50 million. Okay. You know what? We're happy to accept the risk. And it happens. It happens as part of the profitability and part of the budget estimation and planning of each company. Certain things they can get away with and take the decision. Other things are being enforced and they cannot. And now you can see CISOs who made the wrong decision suddenly, you know, being prosecuted. And you can see extremely high fines. And it happens. It's complex. Again, when we're talking about those mega large companies, do they have certain kind of things that go around, they're not solving, but rather they kind of hiding those problems? Possibly, but I don't think that's the general idea. I don't think that's how it works for the majority of businesses.
Well, I mean, I speak to a lot of people and I'm hearing a bit of this coming through. It's like you said, if it's $5 million potentially of the money we could lose, or it's $50 million to fix the problem, people are going to go with the $5 million. They absolutely will.
The interesting part is they have an insurance policy that covers it. So take, for example, a bank, right? So if you had unauthorized transaction and that unauthorized transaction came from a known vulnerability, okay? For the bank, they're saying, well, those authorized transactions in a year cost us, I don't know, a few million dollars. But we are aware that to fix that, it's an overhaul of the whole system. It's downtimes, it's this, it's that. Like, we cannot afford it because if we will do that, our competitors obviously will use that and basically, you know, take advantage. and we will lose our competitiveness as a result. So obviously there are business considerations here in this case, and a company needs to make the right decision for itself, but they also need to maintain a high level of security. So I guess it's a complex process, but I'm sure that's how it works.
Okay, I want to talk now about online identity and how your digital footprint can compromise this.
Yes, so online identity, I always define it as a collection, a lot of information. It's like a puzzle, right? So let's say I have your name. That on its own, not critical. It's public information. I have your email. Not critical. Public information, easy to find through scrapers, through social media, not a problem. Then I have your date of birth, also public, easy to find, not such a big drama. Your address, a little bit more sensitive, but again, probably possible. But if you take all of them together, suddenly it becomes more real. Suddenly it's easier to steal your identity, because if I know your name, your date of birth, your address, your phone, and until now, I could identify myself like online to, let's say, insurance company or to a medical company. I could identify myself just by those details. Even like a transport office I recently called, and the identification, not recently, it was a few years ago. And the identification was, what's your name? What's your address? What's your date of birth? Oh, okay, that's you. And I was in shock. I was like, wow, that was so easy. Like anyone can do that. So when you have a set of those details, that basically creates your online identity. Now, if enough information, personal information, also defined as PII, is compromised, then I can sort of conclude the rest, right? So if I have enough information about you, I can conclude the rest and fill in the gaps, or maybe even guess some of the other gaps. And by that, I can gain access to a lot of your online activity.
I get all that. But I want to just zoom out for a second that majority of people, especially, you know, the new generation and, you know, et cetera, people are operating on the internet. So it's like there is always going to be that risk of this happening. And I need to go and get health insurance from a company. Therefore, I am then putting my trust in these businesses to do the right thing. And they don't do the right thing, as we know. They make mistakes, which happens. So we cannot completely be exempt from this. And I mean, I've spoken to people that, you know, are like, you know, parents, friends and stuff like that. They're obviously very concerned and you're worried about it. I'm like, yeah, but you are still operating online. You still do internet banking. You still do all of these things. Like, you can't even go into a branch anymore to withdraw money out. They've closed them. So it's like, we're almost forced to be in this position, whether people like it or not. It's just the reality of how it is.
Yeah, we have to accept that position that everything becomes more and more online because it's more efficient, it's more convenient, and eventually it's also more productive because who wants to drive to the bank to do a basic transaction? I would rather do it online. So will I give up part of my privacy as a result? For the majority of the cases, yes, because again, we cannot keep on doing things the way they've been done ahead of 20, 30, 40 years ago. That's called progress. But at the same time, we also need to be aware of what information are we giving because, you know, people are feeling very comfortable of giving too much information everywhere. So, for example, you're going into a new website. I go straight away to the security settings. I want to see if there are any restrictions I can apply. Take LinkedIn, right? There's a bunch of privacy settings and security settings you can apply and you can control. Now, will that resolve all the problems? No, but it will reduce the risk. It's what we essentially want to do. We don't want to eliminate the risk. We can't eliminate the risk. No matter how much we try, no matter how many tools we'll buy, the only way for you to be 100% secure is just throw your phone, throw your computer, your laptop, disconnect from technology and go and live in the woods. Then you'll probably be secure.
Yeah, but then you'll be miserable at the same time.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So we're always making the choice of, you know, convenience versus security and privacy. And in many, many cases, the convenience will win. The productivity will win. The profitability will win. But it doesn't mean that we now can say, okay, because it will win, then we don't need to care about security. We still need to care about security. We still need to do the best we can to protect ourselves, to protect our family. And as I said, I keep on going back to this. As awareness grows, people start to take things into their hands. More and more people apply the MFA. More and more people think twice before they share certain information. People will ask sometimes, like somebody asking you for a certain information, like, why do they need that information? I ask it quite a lot. It doesn't, like, if somebody asks you for an information, doesn't mean you have to give it. So it's more about trying to suspecting, trying to kind of think, okay, what can happen? What is my risk at the moment? And as I said, you cannot eliminate it. You can only reduce it. And even if you reduce your risk by 10%, good. That's 10% less of a risk to you to be compromised online.
Okay, so like, where's the line? So, okay, you're obviously more, let's say, you're on the conservative side, but the average probably person just isn't, right? They're not aware. They probably don't care. They're like, well, I've been in Medibank and Latitude and Optus breach and anyone else after that as well. So I've even had people say, yeah, but Chris, I've been in all the breaches. Why should I care? And the other thing's this. This is the other question I have. Even if you said all these companies that put these privacy policies and then you actually ask them the question, you know what the response is? I don't know. And then you just never hear back from these people again. Don't know the answer. They've just put it on there with the intent that no one asks us. But when someone does, someone like you, then I'm often finding people just, there's no response, not really understanding. So do you think people force though? So it's like, I get your point, but I feel like companies are forcing us to forego our security and our privacy now, whether we like it or not.
Well, at the end of the day, when you approach a company and you want a service from them, you need to give some level of information. You need to give, and by that you can say, I give a little bit of my privacy. Well, yeah, if you don't want to give away any of your privacy, don't engage them. End of the day, if I'm coming to you to get a service from you and you request me to sign a contract and you request me to fill in my details, again, it is my choice. It's just a choice that I don't want to make, right? So I do want to get your services and I don't want to sign it, then I will not get your services. So I wouldn't say forcing. It's part of the trade. It's something that we as users have to accept, but we can question that. We have the right to question that, especially with the larger companies. With smaller companies, it's still not implemented to that level and it's still not being enforced and still not being necessarily doesn't have the right levels of compliance. But with the larger ones, again, they've been audited for a lot of this stuff already. Is it perfect? No, but it's, again, I believe the process itself is improving.
Do you think generally people's hands are a little bit tied? And what I mean by that is like everyone needs a bank. Everyone needs to put their money somewhere. So it's like, well, which bank is going to be the best? Is going to maintain my privacy and you know all of these things? People need to have health insurance. So it's like, okay, I need to give away some of my privacy in order to get the health insurance. They're not going to just go, oh, okay, well, you're a customer, but they're giving us these details. So do you think that, again, people's hands are being forced? Like we need these services to operate in our lives. So therefore we do have to give that piece away. But where is that line, would you say?
Well, it's quite individual. So that line is for each person draws his line. And again, in many cases, you don't really have an option. Like, yeah, when I did my health insurance, I gave a lot of the information. Now, if I had a choice of not giving that, would I take that choice? Yeah, I would prefer not to give that information. But at the same time, I do want that service. So I can choose not to do health insurance, but probably it's not a good idea when you have a family. You can call it being forced. I just call it a trade. I'm getting a service, I'm paying for that service, and I need to provide the information at the end of the day. Again, the company, health insurance company, they need that information to do their own math and estimate. It makes sense. Otherwise they will go to bankruptcy. That's where, you know, profitability and the numbers are coming in.
Okay, so let me give you another example. Going back to the branches. So just say someone's like, Chris, I don't want to do online banking. I don't trust it. Okay, I have heard that from people. Fine. But they are now being forced. There's no bank branches that are available. Where are they? They're all gone. They're all like, there's maybe one like in every X amount of suburbs now. Back in the day, not even that long ago, there's lots of them. So that, again, that's why people's hands are being forced. So it's like, well, we don't have a choice now. So how do people get back and call back that privacy? I don't know. I just don't know if people are going to really have that choice. If they want to operate on the internet and do things and be in this, you know, day and age, this is the risk and the trade that you will have to forego.
That's how it already works, yeah. It's true because, again, everything goes on, like majority of the services today go online. And yeah, you will have to forego some of your privacy. And we're already doing that, right? Like social media is tracking us everywhere and it's known. But for example, if you look at Australia, right? So they are now applying certain restrictions on social media until a certain age. That's a good move. And that's an example of something is being done. Now, again, will it solve all the problems? No, but at least we can see that there is a progress to try and kind of mitigate some of the risks, at least to young people. So, yeah, we do give up certain amount of information about us. We do give certain amount of privacy, but it depends who you give it to now. Above it all, there is a concept called trust. And this world cannot work without trust. You have to trust certain people, and you have to trust certain companies, and you have to trust organizations. Now, does it mean they will not disappoint you? No, probably they will. That's just life. I have no other way of defining that, but that's just life.
So with that being said, like, where do we go to from now? As we've established that, you know, more companies are moving online. We need to have these services to operate our daily lives. Like you said, there's still a choice on if I'm going to go to a big bank over, you know, Carissa Breen's opened up her dingy little bank. Perhaps I'm not that secure, right? So what sort of happens now? Like, this is the reality of the world. Majority of people are operating on the internet, okay? And as the generations come up, they are, you know, already so much more involved in this than, you know, you or I were growing up as well. So where does this leave us now from your perspective?
From our perspective, it leaves us, like, the way I see it is I just want to have control over my information. Even if I work with a company, say it's insurance company, bank, doesn't matter who, a medical company, I want to know what is being done with my information. When those organizations accessing my information, I want to know about it. Some people don't. Some people don't care. I do. And I think more and more people will. So then there needs to be levels of control for the end user, so he's aware what's going on with his data. And if that means one of the employees of the bank that I'm working with is checking my information, well, I want to know about it. I don't necessarily in terms of notification. I want it to be an option. But if I go into a log or something in the backend and I want to see that, I want it to be available for me. I think it's a fair request, because when we give them that information, we give them basically the permission to use that information. And this is my main problem with privacy today, because the assumption is that they now own that information, which I think is the wrong way to think about it. And I think, but that's the fact that causes a lot of problems, because they treat it as their information. They treat it like they own it, but it shouldn't be that way. We are the owner of the information. And if they want to use that information, I would much prefer to be aware of it, or I much prefer that to be recorded somewhere.
But that's not really happening now. So how are we going to get companies to get to that point? Is it just going to be a compliance thing? Is it going to be, we're regulated and this is what you need to do? You need to inform your EU when you're doing that?
It's going to be compliance. Hands down, it's going to be compliance, because there is no other way. End of the day, right? If I go to a business and I'm like, oh, look, that product, and that's cool, and you need to implement that, and it will do this and this and that, the company will be like, okay, what am I getting out of it? What, no money out of it? Well, that's all right. We don't need that. Versus, hey, this is a tool that you need to implement to comply with the current, I don't know, compliance work frame, this or another. And if not, $30 million is fine. Then they kind of like, okay, implemented 100K, fine, 30 mil. Okay, let's implement it. I think it has to be this way. It has to be through compliance. It has to be through regulation. And again, to the right businesses, again, you're only limited to what you can enforce on businesses, because certain businesses simply don't have the budgets. And again, that's another problem to deal with. And this is why Australia introduced the maturity level model. So, you know, each business can kind of comply to a certain level.
So Yuri, do you have any sort of closing comments or final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Take care of your privacy. Always think about the risks, and just, you know, throughout the whole discussion, we talked about if people care or don't care. I generally think people should care. I don't think it's all lost. Privacy is a problematic area, but if we think enough and we kind of do our own risk assessment and act on it, we can at least reduce the risk. We can at least be aware of it and do something about it.
This is KBCast, the voice of cyber.
Thanks for tuning in. For more industry-leading news and thought-provoking articles, visit kbi.media to get access today.
This episode is brought to you by Mercsec, your smarter route to security talent. Mercsec's executive search has helped enterprise organizations find the right people from around the world since 2012. Their on-demand talent acquisition team helps startups and mid-sized businesses scale faster and more efficiently. Find out more at mercsec.com today.